nanohub.org. You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
So we're going to go back and do a few more things on magnetic fields, but this is basically a lecture to try to wrap up this low field transport with Boltzmann and Landauer. We've shown two different ways of treating this problem. Each has its own advantages and disadvantages. In the region where they both work, they ought to give the same answer. And we've sort of seen that they have. But I want to just describe in a little more detail the formal mathematical connection between these two. And if you need to do serious calculations sometime, this might prove useful. So it's a little more mathematical than most of them. It's the subject of a very recent paper. So you can go to the ConMat archive and pull the paper down if you want to see the application of this to some real materials. And I'm basically going to give you an overview of what's in this paper. And the paper has many examples, so you can take a look at that. All right, so this is what we want to do. We have this Boltzmann equation. We know how to write it down in the relaxation time approximation. We now know how to solve it near steady state. So we put the time derivative to zero. And we basically solve for the antisymmetric component. We get a small perturbation from equilibrium. It's antisymmetric. It depends on this thing we call the generalized force. The big component that we don't have to solve for is, we know, it's the Fermi function with the Fermi level replaced by the quasi-Fermi level. And this generalized force includes gradients of quasi-Fermi levels and gradients of inverse temperature. And remember, when concentration gradients aren't present, then gradient of the quasi-Fermi level is just related to Q times the electric field. And once we've done the formal solution, which is easy to do, or straightforward anyway, we can evaluate the electric current, or we can evaluate the charge current, and we just work out the results, and we get current is proportional to electric field, or gradient in the quasi-Fermi level, gradients in temperatures. Heat current does the same thing. All right. Now, if I want to connect this to Boltzmann, then or to Landauer, the way we did the Landauer approach, we talked about currents, not current densities, because we weren't dividing by cross-sectional areas or things. So I'll just multiply these by areas. And we talked about voltage differences, not electric fields. So I'll multiply by the length of the resistor. We talked about temperature differences, not temperature gradients. So I'll multiply by the length of the device. And then we can convert from sigma to conductance, from this little sg to this capital sg. And we'll have a Kelvin relation that gives us the Peltier coefficient. And we can convert from thermal conductivity to thermal conductance, just the way we did it in the Landauer. So then we write a very similar set of equations, but instead of a sigma, we have a G. Instead of a kappa, we have a K, etc. All right. So now when we evaluate those parameters, so if I just go ahead and evaluate G this way now, the answer that I get from my Boltzmann equation, if you look back, will look like this. I'll have to produce some kind of sum over K space. And when I get all done doing this, I'm going to end up with a 1 over L squared here out front. So same kind of sum for SG, same kind of sum for K. So the point is that all of these sums that I do in solving the Boltzmann equation, all of these transport parameters, are going to end up being related to some sum over K states that looks similar in each case. It's just sometimes we have an E minus EF to some power J that we have to weight it from. J is 0 for conductance, 1 for Seebeck coefficient, or that SG parameter, things like that. So we have to deal with things that look like this. All right. So I could write all of these transport parameters in at least a notationally more compact form. They're all related to one of these sums or integrals, I0, I1, or I2. Right? And we just have to figure out how to deal with that. Or frequently, experimentally, we want to turn these equations around and write them as voltage equals resistance times current minus Seebeck coefficient times change in temperature. Heat current equals Peltier coefficient times current minus kappa or thermal conductance times delta T. We have expressions for those parameters in the inverted form as well. And you know, they're also can be obtained from sums that have this complicated looking form. So in the end, if we want to solve a problem, all we have to be able to do is to solve sums like that. Right. Work those things out. All right. Now when people do that, they define something called a transport distribution. And remember, when these sums are over k states. But when we work in When we did the Landauer approach, we integrated over energy channels instead of summing over k states. We integrated over energy channels, and all of the transport parameters were related to some kind of integral over energy channels that looked like this, a T and an M. The heat currents had an E minus EF in them. So if we want to relate this Landauer approach with the T's and the M's to this Boltzmann equation approach, where everything is summed over k states, we have to convert the Boltzmann sum over k states into an integral over energy. And then we can see the connection. All right. So to do that, you know, we have to think about that a little bit. I have to be careful with my twos here. The two here is to remind me that when I'm summing over the k states in the Boltzmann approach, you know, the number of states is omega over 2 pi quantity cubed times 2 for spin, right? Each of those k states can hold two spins. So I'm just showing that explicit to make sure I don't drop it. And I'm having to produce a sum over k states of some function of k. Now, what I'd like to do is to evaluate that same quantity by doing an integral of some function capital H of E over energy and get the same answer. And we'll argue that the way that we can do that is we can define this kernel of the integral here, this capital H of E, as 2 times sum over k states H of k, this quantity here, but I need to insert a delta function, E minus EK. If I define this function of E that way, then I've basically done the same thing. And you can see that by just taking this expression, plugging it into the integral. So I integrate over E. I insert this definition of this quantity H of E there. Now I could interchange the order of integration or the summation and integration. And I could do the sum over k states last. And then I could do the integral over energy states first. When I integrate over energy, this delta function, I'm just going to get 1. As long as I'm at one of the k's that's on this EK characteristic. So that's just going to give me 1. And that means as long as I sum over the k states that are on that EK, I'm just going to get the same answer that I started with. All right. So I can convert sum over k states to integrals over energy if I just use this prescription for taking the k-dependent quantity and making it an energy-dependent quantity. So we go back to the quantity that we have. It looks sort of like that. Vx squared, tau f, these things can depend on k. Df, de, that already depends only on energy. Fermi function depends only on total energy. It doesn't matter which direction k is placing. So that's not going to cause a problem. So if I go ahead and work on this a little bit, I like to see a 2q squared over h when I do Landauer. I'm doing Boltzmann here. I'm trying to make it look like Landauer. So let me multiply by 2 and divide by 2. And then let me remind myself here now that when I'm doing this sum over k states, there is really each k state has 2 for spin. Because in the Boltzmann approach, you know, the spin is included when I sum over the k states and I multiply by 2. Okay, now if I define a quantity, sigma of E, which is going to be this sum and the k-dependent quantities, I'll take the constants and include them in there too. I'm going to leave the 2q squared over h out front because I'm going to multiply everything at the end by that. And then the 2's here cancel. And then I have a sum over k states expressed in this form. And now I've lost, I have to remember now when I'm summing over these k states, I don't count them twice because I've already put that factor of 2 in. That factor of 2 that we have to be careful about. So this is a function of energy that now you should be able to convince yourself, if I just use that function of energy, put it in an energy integral, weight it by minus df dE, and do that integral, multiply it by 2q squared over h, I've got the same thing. Right. So we have defined some kernel, some function of energy, which contains all of the material-specific information for the problem. The E of k and the velocity as a function of k and the scattering time as a function of k or energy will all depend on whatever material I'm working with. Right? And as long as I know that function of energy, then all I have to do is to plug it in an integral like this and I can find the conductance. This quantity, sigma sub E, is what people in the thermoelectrics community call the transport distribution. It's the quantity that contains all of the material-dependent information. If we can work that out, then we know the answer. And then more generally, if I want the resistance, the Seebeck coefficient, or the thermal conductance, they're all going to be related to integrals, and the integrals are all going to have the same form. They just have different power of E minus F N over KT. And they all depend on this transport distribution. So you read papers on thermoelectrics, they'll talk about the transport distribution. And our task today is to figure out how this transport distribution relates to the Boltzmann equation. Because we're going to find something useful there. Because if we look at the Boltzmann approach, when we did this, all of these parameters could be obtained from a similar integral. But we had this quantity called transmission, T bar, which was the number of conducting channels times the probability that each of those channels transmits. T of E is a number between 0 and 1. It's a probability that you transmit at that energy. T bar, people call the total transmission. It can be bigger than 1 because it's the probability that a channel will transmit multiplied by the number of channels. So these integrals look very similar. There must be some connection between the two. And that's what we want to discover. We have these two different approaches. They look very, very similar. So if I compare this transport distribution to the transmission in the Landauer formalism, I should be able to obtain things that I'm familiar with. I should be able to see exactly what the transmission is, and I should be able to have a prescription for the number of modes that is more general than the ones we've done before. So, you know, we worked out the number of channels for parabolic bands or for graphene, but what if you only know the band structure through some numerically generated table? Then how do you get it? Well, we haven't made any assumption about band structure in doing any of this. So if we figure out the connection between these two, we will get a prescription for the number of channels that's independent that we can apply to any band structure. Okay, so that's what we want to see. So we took the Boltzmann equation, we re-expressed it from a sum over k states to an integral over energy states. Now it looks close. Now we just have to make the explicit connection. All right, so how do we do that? right. So here, you know, first of all, let me define something, and I'll talk about it for a little bit, and then we'll come back and see why it's useful. I'm going to define the average magnitude of the velocity in the x direction. So let's say we have a resistor or some thermoelectric device where things are flowing in the x direction. I'm going to define the average velocity, or the magnitude of the velocity in the x direction, the average value, this way. And we'll see if we can figure out what this is. So I'm going to take the quantity that I'm computing the average of, and I'm going to weight it by this delta function, E of k, and then I'm going to divide it by the sum over the delta function. Now, can anybody see what this is? You know, I could have computed a similar thing by taking the average. I could have computed the average value of all of the plus x directed velocities. Then I would have just summed over the plus x k states, and I wouldn't have needed an absolute value. But I have the absolute value here so that I can don't have to worry about summing over pluses or minuses. So does anybody see what we're doing here? Can you attach any physical significance to this? What are we doing? What's the denominator? That should look familiar. You've seen that before. That's a general definition of density of states valid for any band structure. In the numerator, we're taking the density of states and we're weighting it by the quantity of interest. So as we sum through k states, at the energy that we're interested in computing this average, the delta function will be 1 if we're at an energy that's on the case that's on E of k. So I sum over all of these k states. Every time I hit a state that has an energy that I'm interested in, I'll get a 1. And we'll just add up all of those values. So we're basically weighting it by we're taking the velocity at a particular energy. We're weighting it by the density of states. If there's a lot of states at that energy, we'll get a big contribution. And then we're dividing by the total density of states to get an average velocity. Yeah?
Does the numerator have any relation to the number of conducting channels? What? The numerator involves delta function and the velocity. Yeah. So does it have any relation to the number of conducting?
Well, it will. I mean, that's why we're making this definition. And you'll have to just be patient, and we'll see how, in the end, this definition will allow us to make that connection. But you're right. We argued earlier that the number of modes was something like velocity times density of states. Here we have density of states when you do the sum, and here we have velocity, and we put it inside the sum, but it turns out that this is going to give us the number of modes.
So you're working at zero temperature?
No. There's no. We haven't put any temperature in it at all. When we want to actually compute a Seebeck coefficient or something, remember that this quantity sigma sub e will be inside an integral that has a minus df dE in it, a derivative of the Fermi function. That'll be where the temperature comes in. There's no temperature involved in this.
Because I think we should insert the Fermi distribution function.
Pardon me?
We should put in the Fermi distribution function to calculate the average.
Well, this is the way I'm going to define. Let's see what this average is. Well, hang on for a minute and ask it. You know, what have we done here? Let's compute this thing, say in 1D. Okay. So if I compute it in 1D, I convert these sums to integrals. I use a density of states in K space. So that's L over 2 pi. I multiply by 2 for spin if I wanted to. Doesn't matter because I'm going to get the same thing upstairs and downstairs, and it's going to cancel. Then I convert this from a integral from minus k to plus k. Well, this should be minus infinity to plus infinity, basically, or big k's, to 0 to k, and multiply by 2. Okay, then I convert the integral over k to an integral over energy by my usual prescription. We take a dh bar k, and I pull out an h bar here, dE, and then I multiply by dE. So I'm just doing a change of variables so I can change to energy. All the constants out front cancel out. I get an integral of a delta function on top. On bottom, well, I had a 1 over v times a delta function. So when I do this integral, actually should do it an integral over dek, then I'll pull out a 1 over v on the bottom. And I'll just get the average. I'll just get the velocity. That's all I got. Not much there. So the average velocity, what I've done is I just got the velocity at the energy that I'm interested in. The energy E here. That's all this did for me. Gave me the velocity at that energy, right? Magnitude of the velocity. How about parabolic bands? Well, I'll work out the sum in 2D. So forget about all those constants because they divide out. I'll have k d k d theta if I'm integrating in a 2D kx ky plane. And I'll do that integral. Magnitude of vx is the velocity at energy E times the absolute value of cosine theta. Let's see. If I want to change my integral from k to energy, I'll just use the usual prescription here. So I've changed my integral. I'm going to change my integral from k dk to dE with that usual prescription. And then instead of multiplying from 0 to 2 pi, I'm going to integrate from minus pi over 2 to plus pi over 2. Because if I do that, cosine theta is always positive, and I can get rid of the absolute values. And then I multiply the result by 2, since I only integrated over half it. But I'm doing the same thing downstairs, so it all divides out. And when I get done, if I integrate cosine theta from minus pi over 2 to plus pi over 2, that's a sine theta between pi over 2 and minus pi over 2. That gives me a 2. Downstairs, I didn't have any cosine theta, so I'm just integrating from minus pi over 2 to plus pi over 2. That gives me a pi. So I've got a 2 over pi from the angular integration. And then I do an integration on top of vx times the delta function. This is just going to give me 1 on the bottom, and it's just going to give me v of e on the top. So I'm going to get that this average velocity is 2 over pi times v of e. Okay. So what is that? You might remember we did that a long time ago. When we had 2D resistors in lecture 4, we said we have these electrons, they're flowing at some angle, theta. If I wanted to know the average value of the x-directed velocity, I had to average over theta. And when I did that, I got 2 over pi times v of e. So what this prescription is doing is just giving us the angle average. It's giving us the averaged x-directed velocity at an energy E. Right? Temperature will come in later. So that's what this is doing. And if you did it in 3D, you would find the average x-directed velocity in 3D. You would do the integration over the polar and azimuthal angles. So the point is that this quantity here is an average over angle at a particular energy, at the energy E. The average x-directed velocity at energy E. That's what it is. Okay, so, take a break. What are we trying to do here? We have this transport distribution, which looks like transmission times M of E in the Landauer formalism, and we're trying to just make this expression more explicit. And I said if we introduce this definition of average velocity, it would help us make this connection clearer. Okay, so now that we know what this is, it's the angle average velocity, let's see how it helps us make this connection. All right. So here's our transport distribution. This is what pops out of the Boltzmann equation. Let me divide by sum delta E minus EK, and then I have to multiply by the same thing. Okay. Now, if you do that, you can see, according to my prescription of an average, I don't now have an average of magnitude of Vx. I have an average of Vx squared times tau. I could put anything out front here when I did this average, and I get the average of that quantity. So now, this is the way I'm going to define the average value of Vx squared tau. So this is the average value of Vx squared times tau at an energy E of interest. And I would compute it just by working out these two sums. Right. The thing that I'm left over with here, this is the density of states. Right. All right. So let's see. Let's do a little bit more work. Let's divide by this average x-directed velocity that we introduced before, and then let's multiply by that average x-directed velocity. And I still have the density of states here. Now let's see, how do we do this? So I have this term average value of Vx squared tau divided by average value of absolute value of Vx. I have the average value of magnitude of Vx, which by definition is given over here on the upper right. But you see the denominator of that expression is also the density of states. So this average value magnitude of Vx times density of states just gives me the numerator of that average value of the magnitude of density of states. All right, now we're getting somewhere. Because now we can look at this a little bit. And this is the expression that we've got. And I told you it was going to lead us somewhere. Well, let me multiply by 2, and then let me divide by 2. And I'll have to do that to get the answers that were consistent with everything else that we did previously in the course. And let me take the stuff out front here. Let me call average value of Vx squared tau divided by average value of magnitude V times 2. Let me say that's the definition of the average mean free path at the energy E. That's the way the Boltzmann equation wants it to be defined. Remember, this was always kind of mysterious. I introduced this thing and I said, you expect it to be something like V times tau, but then we have these factors that we have to be careful to multiply them. If you want to make the Boltzmann equation and the Landauer approach agree, this is the way we would define it. This would work for any band structure, any scattering mechanism. And this quantity is supposed to be T times number of modes, so what's left over here must be the number of modes. So this must be a prescription for the number of modes for any band structure. Okay, so if we do that, then we had a 1 over L here. So this is average value of mean free path divided by L. This now is our definition of number of modes, and that's T of E times M of E. So we figured out, T of E looks familiar. We know that in the diffusive limit, which is the only place these two are going to agree, that the transmission is mean free path divided by lambda. But we didn't know exactly how to define mean free path. All right, now we know exactly how to define it so that it's consistent with the Boltzmann equation. And we knew how to get number of channels by things like figuring out how many half wavelengths would fit into a width and stuff, but we really didn't know how to do it if we were giving an arbitrary EK. All right, now we know how to do it for an arbitrary EK. So that's what we're trying to do. So let me look a little bit at those two quantities that we just derived, and then we'll be done. So first of all, as a little exercise, if you have, the take-home won't take you that busy. If you have a few minutes to do this. Do this in 1D, and you'll find it's just one. If we have a 1D nanowire with one subband, just work out this sum, and you'll find it's one. It should be. There should be one conducting channel. If you work it out in 2D, well, it just takes a little more work. So we have to convert the sum to an integral. We have to integrate in k d theta, magnitude of Vx. We will change that integral from 0 to 2 pi to minus pi over 2 to plus pi over 2 and then multiply by another 2 so that we can get rid of the absolute value. So we can go ahead now and do that angular integration. We can convert the k integral to an energy integral using this change of variables, work through it all, and you'll end up getting an expression which should look vaguely familiar. It's the same one we've been using for the whole course. So when we have a simple band, we just get back all of the results that we got before. You know? But we know what to do now when the band is not so simple. If you work it out in 3D, you'll get the result that I don't think I've derived this in this class. Work this out in 3D and you'll get the simple result in 3D. If you read that paper, you can see what this looks like for some numerically generated band structures that are much more complex. All right, now there's another way that it's very useful to think about this. So let's look at this. This is our definition. You can think about this in a slightly different way, which also turns out to be useful. So let me work this thing out. And let's do it in 3D. So I have a sum over k in three dimensions. So let's say the x direction is where the current is flowing. So I'll sum over the kz direction. I'll sum over the ky direction. And I'll sum over kx greater than 0 so I can get rid of this absolute value. And then I have to multiply by a 2. All right. Now, let me just convert that last sum to an integral. So I have an L over 2 pi. I'll convert that to an integral over energy. And let's see, that h bar that I pick up here kills this 2 pi and this h here. And this L and that L also cancel. So now I have an integral over energy. dh bar k dE is 1 over velocity times velocity. Cancels, and I get an integral over the delta function, which is going to give me a contribution only when I'm integrating from 0 to infinity, if the energy is bigger than E of k, because then I'll include the argument in the delta function and I'll get something. So I get a step function that starts at E. When E is higher than E k, it goes up. And the sum now is over the two orthogonal directions to current flow. All right. So this turns out to give us another way to look at these modes, and actually is also an even simpler way to compute some of these. So the way you would interpret this thing is what we've seen is that we could write the number of channels now as a step function in energy that gives us a 1 every time the energy of interest is above the E of k. So, and the sum is over the k states orthogonal to the direction of current flow. So in 2D, there are two of those. In 1D, there's only one of those. Now, if I look at this, let's say we're looking at it in 2D, and let's say ky is the direction orthogonal to the current flow. All right. And I have some energy E here, which is the black line. And there is some EK, which is given by the blue line. Okay. Now, when I'm summing over these transverse states, these are the various modes, right? Each one of these transverse states. I'm summing over these states spaced by 2 pi over L. If E is greater than the energy of that state, then I pick up a 1 when I do this sum. So I just go through each of these. If E is greater than the energy at that k space, then this step function gives me a 1, and I add those all up. Once I get out here too far, then the E of k is above that, and I don't get it. So what we have done is to count the k states that are below the energy of interest. We've counted the k states in the transverse direction. Those are our independent energy channels. And this expression here is just counting each one of them up, and if that transverse k state has an energy that's lower than the energy of interest, then it's one of the conducting channels at that energy. All right. So You can also work out the density of modes in 1, 2, and 3D just by working out that sum. And if you work it out, it'll give you the same answer. It's actually a little easier to do. It'll give you the same answer that the previous one did. You know, but you could put any E of K in. You know, maybe you only know it as a table. You run band structure lab on NanoHub, and you get a table of E of K. You can put the numerical table of E of K in there and work out the sum and compute the density of modes for each one. All right, then one more thing, and then we've made the connection. Mean-free path. So this must be our definition of mean-free path if we want the Boltzmann equation and the Landauer approach to agree. The Boltzmann equation in the relaxation time approximation, which is the only one we've been talking about. All right. So this is some specially defined average. That's what these double brackets are for. But this average here, the way we define these averages was this is an average over angle at a specific energy. So I'm going to leave this as an exercise because it's just some unilluminating algebra. But remember, I was pulling some things out of the air earlier. It was easy to see why in 1D, V times tau was not the mean free path. We had to have 2 V tau because only half the time did it scatter back and really do any damage. That'll come out of this automatically when you work this out. A little more mysterious, I told you that you have to, your mean free path in 2D is not V times tau, it's V times tau multiplied by pi over 2. Right. So we're properly averaging over angle. You work that out in 2D, that's what you'll get. If you want to know what the mean free path is in 3D, it's 4/3 times V over tau. So you have to be a little bit careful because people will quote mean free paths, you know, and you might want to compare your results to theirs. Most people, when they define a mean free path, will define it to be V times tau. If we work with mean free paths in this way, we'll have slightly different answers. We have mean free paths that are defined to make sense in a Boltzmann view. So our mean free paths are related to transmission. It's T is equal to mean free path over mean free path plus L. When L is equal to the mean free path, the transmission is 1/2. And in order to make the transmission 1/2, at that point, you have to define your mean free paths this way. But you know, when you're reading papers and people are quoting mean free paths, they might be just quoting V times tau. You have to be aware of it. Oh, let's see. I guess I am going to work one out, but we'll do it quickly. You know, we worked out the average. We could work this thing out. We worked out this average velocity earlier. We saw it was 2 over pi times V. If we work out the numerator, we just have to work out an integral of Vx squared tau. And when we do that, we're going to get a V times cosine theta squared. So my integral is going to have to be a cosine squared theta when I do the integration. That's going to give me a 1/2 V times tau up front. So when I put the 1/2 V squared tau on top, the 2 over pi V on the bottom, multiply by 2, I get the pi over 2 that we got before times V tau. All right. So that's it. As I said, there are some loose ends that we want to clear up about magnetic fields, but we've really seen most of what we want to see on low field transport now. We've seen 2 different ways to treat it. In the end, we calculate all of these coefficients. We can calculate it with a Boltzmann equation, but we don't quite know what to do in the ballistic limit. We can calculate it in a Landauer formalism, and you know, we can either use the transport kernel or we can use transmission and number of modes. And if I'm going to use the transmission formalism, we now have prescriptions for evaluating the number of conducting channels and the transmission and the mean free paths. All right. So when you want to solve a real problem, you know, it's likely that parabolic bands aren't going to be quite good enough, but now you know what to do when we have to do it properly. And if you're interested in really seeing how this works out in detail, that paper that I referred to at earlier will show you some examples of applying this to much more complicated band structures. Any questions? All right, so I think just to see whether you're paying attention for this lecture, there is one problem related to this on the take-home exam. Well, it's just working out one of these things like that. All right, I will see you all in 1 week.